Well, folks, that's it for 2020. Scott McLaughlin is the championship, so we can all go home and have a rest. Oh, except Bathurst is coming. Cam Waters was back on the winner's list, taking the final race on Sunday from McLaughlin and Win Cup. It's his first solo win in the series. In all measures, it was a disastrous weekend for Red Bull Racing. They either had single lap speed and nothing in the race, or good race pace but nothing in qualifying. A rare in-race car failure for Fabian Coulthard limited the Red Bull pain in the team's title, but the DJR Team Penske team did open the gap a little. This is Supercars in Review.
Welcome, everybody, to our next episode of Supercars in Review. We're talking about the Bend Round 2, and I'm joined by Andrew Clark. How you going, Clarky?
Hey, Nevin, I'm not going too bad at all. What are we, 2 weeks away now from Bathurst, which is what we're all excited about, and
woohoo!
The end of this, although technically the season's possibly over already. So, an interesting time, I think. Scotty McLaughlin will be very happy going to Bathurst with no risk to his championship, unless he does something really bad and cops a penalty.
Oh, well, then don't go to Bathurst.
Well, that's exactly it. Yeah, safest way.
Car shits itself coming out of the gates. Oh, sorry. Oh, it's all over. Well, give me the trophy now.
just head off to his IndyCar run a week earlier.
Yes. Well, we'll see how it all goes. Okay. Well, we're talking about the Bend, the second leg. And the first race qualifying was Scott McLaughlin, Cameron Waters, followed by Shane Van Gisbergen, Jack LeBrock in fourth, and rounding out the top five is James Courtney. Now, the shootout, yeah, was a little boring. McLaughlin on pole. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, it was all about the 15-6s, wasn't it? I mean, Jack LeBrock, 15-5-9-5-6, which I call a 15-6. And then you got a whole pile of people on 15-6s. There was only a beast separating the whole lot of them in that mid-pack. And then you had, of course, Fabian Coulthard didn't do a very good lap in 13th or 12th. Jamie Wincup did worse, you know. So, yeah, but other than that, it was just really that Scott McLaughlin is a bloody class act when it comes to qualifying.
Well, it didn't bode well for Jamie Wincup if you can't even keep up with Scott McLaughlin in qualifying. He thought all his work's ahead of him. One of the notables was Reynolds was disqualified for a Parc Fermé infringement.
Yeah, pretty crazy, isn't it? He'd only qualified 21st, so he only lost three spots on the grid to it. But how they could possibly take the car back in the garage, knowing, or they should have known full well, that they couldn't do it. So that was a pretty catastrophic blunder. They're probably lucky that he was 21st and not 11th or 10th or something. Imagine being disqualified if you're up the front. So I think, and in all honesty, it probably explains a little bit about what's going on at Erebus at the moment. They don't seem totally switched on at the moment to me. And I think, you know, they've got 2 weeks to sharpen their focus and do what they need to at Bathurst, which is a track where they've always done well and will be expecting to do well again.
Well, the start was aborted. I have no idea why. It was just like, oh, we're about ready to go. Oh, yellow. Oh, it's aborted. And I'm thinking, well, it doesn't look like anybody's stalled on the grid or anything like that. So I wasn't too sure.
No, the story is that the person who's supposed to wave the green flag at the back of the field to say everything's okay just didn't wave the green flag at the back of the field. So that's what it looks like happened. And, of course, they had to do another warm-up lap. So the race was cut from 32 to 31 laps, which was interesting in itself. Imagine if this was the week before on the long track when the car tyres were being punished. Like, one lap's different could have made a huge, huge impact on the race. I mean, Van Gisbergen, for instance, probably would have finished fourth or fifth if it was one lap shorter last week instead of 10th. But as we know, the short track, the West Circuit, didn't hammer the tyres in the same way. So we didn't see the same torture that the cars went through the week before.
Well, McLaughlin beat them off the start again. Followed by LeBrock and then Waters into turn one. But you know what? They didn't have it all their own way.
No, they didn't, because Shane Van Gisbergen also got a really good start and, you know, coming off third off the grid. So he was on the same dirty line as McLaughlin. So surprisingly, they got away fairly well. And it didn't take him long before he was just pushing his way past Cam Waters, who was a bit of a sitting duck. So they clearly worked out on Saturday, the Red Bull team, clearly worked out with Van Gisbergen how to switch on the car early and quickly, you know. So if you're getting a good qualifying lap, it means the car's coming on nicely. And it was just so strong in that opening lap that, you know, you thought anything was possible with him.
Well, LeBrock was challenging McLaughlin there for a little bit, but just couldn't quite pull it off.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive to watch, wasn't it? The young guy chasing down the seasoned master, even though McLaughlin's still young as well. But he was really looking for a way around him, but he just couldn't get there. And I think he was very conscious that it was early in the race. There's no point having body contact. Let's see what we can do throughout it. So keep close, and then maybe we'll try an undercut, which is what they ended up trying.
Yeah, well, Wincup was down in 11th after the start. But then I suppose there wasn't much going on until the third lap when Rick Kelly was spun.
Yeah, contact with Todd Hazelwood, which was investigated, but everybody was cleared as a bit of a racing incident. But how good is that new turn six combination? So remember, last week we went left at turn six. This week we went right, and we went right really sharply with massive runoff areas, and there was wide off the side of the track. So, you know, when we looked at it, you know, the first lap they're going three and four wide through there. But it's allowing all sorts of opportunities to come into play. And in this case, you know, there was a small gap, but the track was so big there that Hazelwood had the chance, and he's just stuck his nose up the inside and hasn't quite worked. And I think the race steward, whatever he calls himself, behaviour officer, Craig Baird, decided that it was just one of those things that neither of them really was at fault. And, you know, Rick maybe didn't give Todd enough room, and Todd maybe didn't give Rick enough room, and so no penalty there at all. So off they went. But you know, Rick was left facing the wrong direction.
So that was that new turn. It was now turn six, correct?
Yes.
Well, it was a ripper turn because it was like three different lines into that. You could go out really wide and get there, then really, like, obviously it was a late turn in, but you got a great exit, or you could just stuff it down on the inside while someone out went wide, went, hello, I'm here, you can't do that. And so there was a bit of that going on. I love that.
Absolutely. And this is what happens when you go from high speed to low speed and you're requiring people to brake. But if you then, as you say, give people multiple lines through a corner, that's what we need to create good racing. So that corner, I thought the little combination of turn six and seven coming back onto the track where they were last week was a really, really good little combination of corners. If only we had the tyre wear, I think we would have seen an absolutely cracking race. But we
didn't. Fifth lap, it was completed and the pit window opens. No one came in. No, it's rushed for the pits on this one.
You expect to see an army of them coming in, don't you? But no one was really that interested. So what that told us is that strategy was going to play its game in this round. It wasn't going to be everybody doing the same thing. It was going to be people doing different things. And the beauty of that is that you end up with people on different grip levels. So if you come in early, and we know that LeBrock pitted on lap seven, for instance, so he was the first of the leaders to pit. He came in at 0.75 seconds behind McLaughlin. The question there was that if you throw him onto new tyres, can he make up that 0.75 and get in front before McLaughlin decides to pit? And we know that supercars, like, there's not an undercut like Formula One because we're not preheating the tyres, they're not on tyre warmers. So you've got to get the tyre up to speed. We're only changing rear tyres, we're not changing front. So we've still got the grip, but we've got to look after the traction part. So that was probably all we were going to see in terms of strategy. Were people going to try the undercut, or were we going to do the triple eight thing and keep them out as long as possible and give them grip going into the end of the race?
Well, McLaughlin came in the next lap, and I assume that was to prevent the undercut.
Absolutely. But the great thing about McLaughlin, and the really great racing drivers know when they have to turn it on. And so they gave him this thing and said, he's come in, Scott, you need to go. And so he's picked up 1 second on LeBrock in that first sector. He's gone even in the middle sector, and then he's done a 0.3 second quicker third sector. So that's 1.3 seconds. So you started out at 0.75 seconds. So already we're up to 2.05 seconds just on your in lap alone. But then he's pulled another second on his out lap, the first sector of his out lap. So not only has he come in well, he's also gone out well. And this was the key to not winning the race, because he was always going to win it, but winning it fairly easily.
Well, Waters came in on lap 13 and SVG came in on 15. What does that mean?
Well, what it means is that Van Gisbergen had fairly consistent tyres throughout the thing. So he was actually lapping faster on his old tyres than LeBrock was on his new tyres in that, you know, lap 12, 13, 14 type bracket. So he was pulling away from LeBrock. And that was critical because what it meant was that he ended up coming out on the track in front of LeBrock. And so he was hunting down second place. Waters, on the other hand, was still fast as well, but he stopped a little bit earlier. So he was then came out behind LeBrock, but he had to pass him on the track, which he did manage to do. But it was just an interesting little balance, you know. So if your tyres were consistent, we weren't falling off the cliff like last week, you drop off a little bit and then you could stay consistent, and it was proving okay.
Well, there was a couple of things going on. The race obviously was continuing. The pit stops did their cycle, but there was some things going on. LeBrock, his airbox nuts, but it looks like Tickford's old nemesis has come back with the airbox problems.
Yeah, they're going to want to get on top of that, aren't they, at Bathurst? So it could be a bit of a problem if you're having it. And there was, you know, talk that it happened the next day to Courtney as well, but he said it was something different to that, even though the team was saying it was an airbox fire. But yeah, it cost him a spot in the race. I mean, he'd already lost out to Van Gisbergen and Waters through the pit stop window. But then when he had this little snuff out in between 6 and 7, Courtney grabbed him as well. So, you know, he dropped down to fifth spot by that stage.
The race basically settled in, and that's the way it was to the end. McLaughlin won from Van Gisbergen, and then Waters rounded out the podium. That was it for basically a one-lap shortened race.
Yeah.
The critical point, I would say, was McLaughlin increased his gap to win cup, and also, to me, the big mover in the race, one of the big movers, was Reynolds.
Yeah, well, it helps when you start 24th, doesn't it? You can actually pick up some spots. But
picked up eight spots.
Yeah, and Fabian Coulthard, who also qualified poorly, as we said, he picked up 6 spots. And there were a couple of losers. I mean, Rick Kelly dropped 7, and which, you know, probably happens when he gets spun out. And Forward dropped 5. But as you say, this weekend, we knew what this weekend was about. This weekend was about, can McLaughlin get to 300 points and have the title wrapped up before we go to Bathurst? Which then, you know, if he could manage that, it turns Bathurst into a gloves-off affair. Like, let's go racing. We're not being conservative. I'm not thinking championships. All I'm thinking about now is winning that race. So that getting up to 263 points was absolutely critical at that point. It was a big jump to make.
Well, any points gain. Any, you know, well, that was the thing of the whole event. Can he actually get to 300 points in front of Jamie Wincup? And it was looking like that could happen.
Yeah, because when you think about it, what were you talking about, 80-odd points going into the round that he had to make up to get to that point? And you're thinking, like, that's actually a fair amount of points to pick up without somebody having any dramas. So Wincup qualifying badly in the first race, I mean, McLaughlin must have just been rubbing his hands thinking, this is exactly what I needed, you know. He's not going to be too close to me. The question was always, how many points can you get? And I think, you know, he set up the whole weekend by winning the race, obviously, from pole. But that gap back to Wincup just opened it up and said, you know, it is really possible to get that 300 points now.
The finishing order was Scott McLaughlin, followed by Shane Van Gisbergen. Then rounding out the podiums, Cameron Waters. In fourth position was Jack LeBrock, followed by Anton Di Pasquale and Nick Percat. In seventh position was James Courtney, followed by Mark Winterbottom, Fabian Coulthard, Jamie Wincup in 10th, and Chas Mostert in 11th. SGV.
We went to 11th there because I want to talk about the way the cars seem to cluster themselves. So that 8th to 11th battle, like there's only less than two seconds between all of those four cars. And this is one of the great things about supercar racing is that we might have seen, you know, McLaughlin and Van Gisbergen, and they were, you know, half a second apart. But then we got, you know, 6 seconds to Waters, and Waters was 5 seconds in front of LeBrock. But then LeBrock had two cars breathing down his tail. And then Winterbottom had three cars breathing down his tail. So if you take your eyes off the front of the field, there's some really good dicing going on. And even the very back of the field, and when we'll talk about it in the final race of the weekend, like 5 wide in a corner they were at one stage. Like there's some great racing so long as you stop only focusing on your heroes.
Well, that was the saviour of the rounds, I suppose, or that was the saviour of the races. Yeah. SVG thought it was a bit of a snooze fest, though.
Yeah, he'd come back and started talking again about the aero wash, that you can't get close enough to overtake properly. So, yeah, he said that they changed the rear tyres. He thinks they should have changed the left-hand side tyres to give him more grip, which they did the next day. So they listened to him, which is a good thing. Yeah, the aero wash, they really do have to do something about this. They have to make these cars have the ability to overtake and to follow other people without causing dramas. They cut the aero last year to this year, didn't cut it enough.
Ah, well, time will tell whether they do any more. Who knows? I mean, there's a lot of focus on Gen 3 at the moment, so I don't know how much more of this current car is going to get changed.
Well, there's been a bit of talk about that as well, which we'll talk about when we do the Bathurst preview, you know, where they're talking about what they're looking for. So they are quite aware that this is an issue. And certainly having someone as big a name in the sport as Shane Van Gisbergen coming out and calling it a snooze fest and talking about aero wash ruining the race for him, they've got to listen. So, you know, let's hope they are listening.
The next day, after everybody's gone back and had a sleep and come back refreshed, Sunday's race 29, the qualifying was Scott McLaughlin, Fabian Coulthard, Cameron Waters in third, Jamie Wincup rounding out the first two rows, and then the third row was James Courtney and Anton DiPasquale. The one noticeable in this was there was no Alex Davison. They had engine dramas.
Yes, and they'd already sent off their spare engine for rebuilding for Bathurst, so they didn't have an extra engine. So he was out for the day and was a spectator. So he looked a bit disappointed about it all, which you probably would be, because that particular team and that car just needs as much track time as it can get to help them get to where they need to get to. So I think that's probably what was hurting him more than actually not racing, was losing out on all that track time.
The only other surprise, SVG down in 14th.
I know, amazing, isn't it? The day before or other days, they've had a really good qualifying car and an okay race car. This time around, he just had nothing. He just could not switch that car on the tyres. So no single lap speed for him.
What do you put that down to? He was there one day and he's not there the next.
I know, he just said we sucked. They detuned it. They did something wrong with the setup. And because the session's so quick, if you've got it wrong, you're going to suffer because there's no time to fix it. And then the next session comes 5 minutes later. So you could be in a world of pain if you've got it totally wrong, which clearly they did.
Red Bull just seem hot and cold at the moment. The consistency isn't there.
No, and it's bizarre because in this case, you've got Wincup qualifying in fourth spot. So the day before, Wincup was in 14th. Now we've got Van Gisbergen in 14th, but Wincup's there. But even then, you know, he's 0.2 off McLaughlin. You know, so he's not quite got that speed, but he was slightly better in qualifying, which must have given him some hope that he could stave off the extra points needed.
Yeah, well, okay, race started. Then Fabian Coulthard blasts off the line. He actually didn't win the start, but McLaughlin was a little bit in front of him, but then he just got the legs, did the old, we'll push you down a bit low. Yeah. Then he's flicked out wide, had the better run into the turn and come out in the lead.
Yeah, it shows he watched the tape from the week before, didn't he, with Van Gisbergen's move on McLaughlin. So, yeah, you push him, keep pushing him on the dirty line, and you know, because what you know is that, and you watch the footage from in McLaughlin's car, and they were just line ball all the way down, but McLaughlin's on the dirty line. He had to break early. But I also think there's an element of, I don't really need contact, do I? I've just got to finish in front of Wincup. I think there was an element of that to him. And he said after the race, you know, he was playing it a little bit safe.
Well, Jamie Wincup did have a bit of a look at McLaughlin, but he couldn't get it done. He couldn't get in front of him, which probably...
Well, that was the one that mattered, wasn't it? That you just want to finish in front of Wincup, don't you? Wincup was not going to get such an easy pass, and he was pretty keen, but he just didn't have it.
Yeah, well, that first lap probably had the most in it, because further down there was pretty biff and barge, and there was a 5-wide going into the last turn. It was crazy.
It was wild, wasn't it? I mean, turn 6, we had two lots of 3-car wide going in nose to tail. So there were 6 cars within bee's dick of each other. And then, of course, we ended up with 5 wide. And the 5 wide were the last 5 cars in the field, which is even more interesting. So, you know, they always talk about, you know, we're not fighting for sheep stations. They are. Every spot matters to a racing car driver, and they were proving it. And to see them coming 5-wide onto the straight, it was like, oh my God, you know, arms in the air. And
trying, two of them ended up in the grass.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? But good. Good on them. they entertained me for a bit, and that's what it's all about, my entertainment.
Oh, then Courtney gets past De Pasquale, but unfortunately Anton's out in the dirty line, and a couple of other drivers, well, Percat jumps him as well.
Yeah, we saw this a few times during the weekend, that if somebody can dig up the nose and push you a little bit wide, you're in strife, and it's like watching an old Formula Ford race where, you know, if you fall out of the pack, you could end up dropping 10 spots. In this case, De Pasquale only dropped the 2 spots. But, yeah, fascinating to watch how it happens. And we even heard, I think, the day before, our drivers were actually doing that and forcing people out to allow their teammate to follow them through at the same time. So it's a thing.
Well, the only other noticeable in the early laps was in lap 2, Holdsworth gets into Jacobson and then retires, and Jacobson has to retire a couple of laps after that.
Yeah, just a bit of damage to the steering and the front end of the car. So that was it for Lee. Probably sums up his weekend, really.
Didn't look that bad.
No, but it doesn't take much, does it, to knock a steering arm out or to do some damage up the front end that, you know, in a quick race, you know, what are we talking? It was 32 laps at 1 minute and 15 seconds. So they're not long races. So if you've got to start pulling away the front end of the car, you're not going to get it done in time. So it was really, let's just stop. Let's get ready for the next race.
End of lap 5, the pit window opens and shock horror. No one comes in again.
Nothing happened. Oh, no. What are they doing to us? There's something wrong, isn't there?
Basically 2 laps later, though, Coulthard slows down and lets McLaughlin past.
Yeah, there's team orders. Not team orders necessarily. I think Coulthard would have done it whether he was asked to or not. He's quite aware of where the championship was at, and he wanted McLaughlin to win the championship, so let him take a spot. Yeah, first to second, that's 8 points. Yeah, that's a big collection of points in this game. So smart move by the team. Let him through and then let him away. The beauty of that also is that Coulthard becomes the defender. You know, he's there to protect the tail of McLaughlin as well. So smart move by Coulthard.
Well, if rumours have it, Coulthard won't be into the team next year. So I don't know why he's taking orders. I'd say stuff ya.
You know, I think he was just doing what he thought was the right thing to do. You know, and everybody wants a good obedient dog, don't they, in race teams? You know, want disobedient ones.
Fair enough. Who gives a rat? He's not there next year, maybe.
Maybe it'll help him somewhere at Bathurst, for instance. You know, maybe Scott McLaughlin will let him through to win Bathurst.
Yeah, we can see that happening. So there's a few strategies going on, because that's kind of way these races went, actually. So De Pasquale was one of the ones to pit first on lap 8. He was currently running at 7th.
So he was probably the first of the leaders, if you talk 7th spot being a leader. So he was one of the first to come in, and then that sort of started the tumble of people pitting. So, you know, Coulthard and Waters pitted in the next lap, and they were coming in out of 2nd and 4th. Then a couple of laps later was McLaughlin, who pitted out of the lead, handed the lead, obviously, to Wincup, and then he pitted afterwards in lap 14. But that's where the drama started for Jamie. Like, if you're sitting there thinking, you know, I'm in 3rd spot, it's not such a bad result, it's not too bad, it's not too bad, it's not too bad, I'm going to do my pit stop, and then it just went to crap, didn't it?
Well, it was that the hose was just over in his bay, just that little bit, and it snagged it. Oh, God, really? It's just nothing went right.
And it took a while to actually work out what had happened. I mean, I'm watching it on the TV thinking, oh, they've done a 3-tyre stop. But then why would they change the front right? So I'm trying to work out, why would you change the front? And then, of course, we end up getting the footage and showing the rattle gun getting ripped out of the mechanic's hands, and he had to run and retrieve it. So costly in a couple of ways. Yeah, it's about a 4-second loss of time, which meant spots on the track. And we know track position is king. But it did also cost the team 30 championship points at the end of the race as well, in the team's championship only, not in the drivers. So it didn't affect what was happening between him and McLaughlin, but it has a big impact on the Shell versus Red Bull.
And that, actually, that battle is very close. So those points were quite important. The other noticeable, when the rattle gun or the air hose clipped Jamie's car and he dragged the rattle gun out of his teammate's hand, the car also skidded to a stop on top of the hose and ripped the casing off it, but then the wheel went off the hose. It's like if the car had a stop on top of the hose, there's no way the guy would have been able to get the rattle gun out.
Well, until they put the spike in and lifted it up, yeah. True. So there would have been another couple of seconds. So, yeah, it was just interesting. I mean, the funny thing to me is that, like, Red Bull Racing or T888 has been the standard setter for so long, and it's really strange to see something like that happen. But, you know, motorsport's a strange sport, isn't it? So, but I'll guarantee you one thing. There'll be enough of an analysis going on, and some smart little boffin's going to be sitting in the back of the 888 workshop working out how to prevent that from happening ever again.
Yeah, well, I know how to do that. Make sure the guy at the rattle gun doesn't leave the bloody hose half hanging in the lane. It's not hard. It's not hard at all.
Yeah, move, no, but I think the good engineers and the good teams, they work out how to not allow human error to play a part. So, you know, you'll find something. They will do something for Bathurst that we'll look at and say, wow, didn't think of that.
Yeah, well, moving on, lap 21, Coulthard and Reynolds, for some reason, just ground to a halt. They didn't come together, separate parts of the track, but they both went out at the same time, busted bits of cars, things not working, whatever, brings out a safety car.
It's funny, isn't it, to see two cars coasting to a stop. So Davey Reynolds, I think, got out of the way. So he wasn't the reason for the safety car. Fabian was. So Fabian's in that little noise. So, you know, when they come out of turn seven and they smack onto the rev limiter and they can be on the rev limiter for half a second or a second, and you hear the car, when you hear the in-car footage, it's like, it's so violent when it hits the rev limiter.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and then it just kind of and grinds to a stop. So whether it happened at that particular point and because of that, I don't think so. I think it was a drive shaft that affected his team. Or something in the drive line. So they changed transaxles and all sorts of other things. But it's hitting the curbs, doing more of that damage. And it just happened to be at that point in time when the engine gets that massive vibration from hitting the rev limiter.
Well, SVG pits and puts on four fresh tyres. So he's obviously taken a bit of a gamble there and he comes out in ninth.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of the safety car coming, isn't it? That it opens up prospects to do something unusual. So he was the only person, I think, in that race to do the four tyres. But you got them bunching up under the safety car and you've got Van Gisbergen on four good tyres. You're sitting there thinking, how far can he get? How good is this going to be? And more importantly, Wincup's in front of him. You know, so are they going to play the team game and not let him pass him, or are they just going to let him go hell for leather?
Well, they let him go hell for leather because he passed Jamie. I was surprised. I thought, should you be passing Jamie right now? Should he be trying to just keep on and hold as many points as possible? But no, he passed him.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you look at it and you think they were kind of relying on a couple of things there, because what it did was it cost four championship points, the move from Van Gisbergen on Wincup, and it pushed him to 299 points behind McLaughlin. So we're getting really close. And so what it came down to is that in the final race, when you're looking at those numbers, McLaughlin had to beat Wincup to seal the championship, and Wincup had to beat McLaughlin to keep it alive into Bathurst. Bathurst, one race, 300 points, anything is possible. If McLaughlin fails to finish and Wincup wins, and the gap is 299 points, Wincup wins the championship by a point and Bathurst. So the aim was to try and keep it alive. So I was quite surprised that they did that.
Well, who knows? Maybe they're thinking of championship teams points. I don't know. But
they might have been. Or maybe they've just conceded that they weren't going to win the championship, which is an even stranger concept.
Yeah, well, I could have told them that a couple of rounds ago. The other only noticeable, Pye was off the track with a flat tyre on lap 30. But in the end, the finishing order was McLaughlin from DePasquale and Waters but on the podium. Coming in fourth was James Courtney, which was a fantastic effort, especially he was really racing to keep that position on the last lap. Rounding out the top five was Shane Van Gisbergen.
Yeah, interesting. So have a look at that. DePasquale was the first of the cars to pit and he's ended up second in the race. Van Gisbergen was the last to pit and he was fifth in the race. So it's interesting to see where people end up, you know, the different tyre strategies and that kind of converge. But also remember, Anton was seventh when he pitted and then he's ended up second. So I'm thinking that the early stop's not such a bad idea.
Well, Shane would have been further down if it wasn't a safety car as well.
Yeah, but he wouldn't have done four tyres either, so he would have had a shorter pit stop. But be interesting to see what would have happened, but that's what this game's all about, isn't it? What could have, should have, would have happened. At the end of the day, you know, it ended up the way it did.
Well, that was the top five. Sixth place was Nick Percat, followed by Jamie Wincup in seventh, then Chaz Mostert, Rick Kelly in ninth, and rounding out the top 10, Andre Heimgardner.
Yeah, and the only other thing in that race was Bryce Fullwood copping a 15-second penalty for turning around Jack LeBrock on the fourth lap. So he copped a 15-second penalty for his efforts on hitting Jack LeBrock. So that proved costly, dropping him down to 18th on the track. So, not a good day for the young guy who was pretty promising the week before.
And obviously, Wincup, as you mentioned before, copped the $1,500 fine and got minus 13 points for that pit lane drama, which I think was the right decision. It was a team thing, not a driver thing.
Yeah, there had to be some sort of penalty for it. So I think they got that right as well. I agree with you.
Yeah, and the only other stat was the safety car period was for a total of 4 laps.
I know, we haven't seen the safety car much this year, so I think we should celebrate every lap it does. Poor driver would be pretty bored sitting there thinking, come on, let me go. I've got this pony car, I've got this Mustang, and I want to go. No, you sit and wait the whole race.
Okay.
Because I don't think he's even got a TV screen in there. They can't even watch the racing.
Okay, I don't know what to say to that. Race 30, qualifying. I'll go through the top six. Scott McLaughlin, surprise, surprise, followed by Cameron Waters, Jamie Wincup in third, James Courtney in fourth, followed by Fabian Coulthard in fifth, and Chaz Mostert rounding out the third row in sixth. In seventh is Bryce Fullwood, eighth is Nick Percat, Anton DePasquale, and rounding out the top 10, Macaulay Jones. Now, the big noticeable, SVG. Like, what the hell happened there?
I know, if he thought 14th was bad, what did he rate 22nd?
22nd. I can't fathom it.
No, he just had an off on his first run at turn 11 and really missed the second run. He didn't get a second run at it. So that was the reason there. His comments were interesting. He's just where we've at. We've detuned it from yesterday. I've got no words. We just sucked.
Well, I think he was on the money.
Pretty honest assessment, yeah. But the funny thing is, when you're doing that, and at that stage, Jamie Wincup was sitting on a provisional pole. You know, Scott McLaughlin had mucked up his first lap and had to go for a second lap to try and get him. So we're sitting there watching, can he do it? Can he do it? And of course he did it. And he jumped him by 0.2 seconds. But then Cam Waters also jumped him. And Cam Waters was just having a terrific qualifying weekend. Oh, that gap of 0.1998 between him and McLaughlin was the biggest qualifying gap between the two all weekend. The other two were 0.07.
Wow.
Cam Waters has really stepped up this weekend and, terrific effort. And so, you just sit there watching him on the front row of the grid thinking what's possible.
Well, McLaughlin on pole again, but he didn't have all his own way on the start. Again, Cameron Waters kind of muffled him over and then took the racing line through turn one and come out in the lead.
Yeah, so the two of them got really good, solid starts, fairly even. I thought Waters got a slightly better jump on the racing line. But what we saw was, again, like we saw in race two, if you're on the dirty line, you're not going to be able to break as late as the car on the racing line. So in this case, Waters had the jump on him because he could brake later and off he went.
Not on cold tyres anyway.
No, certainly not. And again, was it, we knew at the start of this race, looking at it, when you've got, McLaughlin and Wincup right behind him on the grid, because first and third on the grid. So you sitting there looking at McLaughlin on the grid with Wincup right behind him, and you know there is only one thing going through McLaughlin's mind. I have to beat Wincup. So if he finishes in front of Wincup, he is the champion. So he'd be sitting there thinking, and that was the only thing on his mind as he went into that corner was, I'm not going to lock up and I'm not going to hit him, because if he'd locked up and hit Waters, he could have copped a penalty. He could have broken the car. All sorts of things could have happened. So, he gave him a little bit of room, but it was a great move by Waters.
Yeah, as you said, McLaughlin, all he had to do was keep in front of Jamie. And I think on his mind, that's all he did. Lap two was a bit more interesting. Courtney passed Chaz, followed by Coulthard, Percat, and Fullwood.
Yep, again, that Formula Ford action. Push them a little bit offline and then just watch the train zip down the inside. So I think you had to be very, very conscious of not being on the outside of that turn 6, turn 7 combination. And yeah, Courtney punished him. And then to watch the others go through, you must have just been sitting there looking in his mirror, thinking, what the hell's going on here? Who else can pass me? Where's the rest of the field? Are they going to get me too?
Well, SVG was the biggest mover, probably. 6 spots in the first lap alone.
Yeah, well, that's what happens, isn't it? You've got a good guy sitting in 22nd. You're going to see some pretty impressive outputs there. And he was in a mood, wasn't he? And, yeah, those 6 spots. And then he kept going. He didn't stop there. He just kept on passing people. So it shows that, yeah, there's probably 2 class acts in the field in terms of cars, which is the 888 and probably the Shell Mustangs. Probably the Tickford Mustang you could throw in there now at the moment. And they can pass the other cars relatively easy. But those 3 can't pass each other too easily because they're all fairly similar in terms of their track performance. So he was making the most of having inferior cars to get past.
Well, pit window opens again. No rush. It's like tumbleweeds rolling down pit lane with no cars coming in. Where's everybody? Waters keeps on going. And obviously, McLaughlin's going to keep following him. And then Jamie Wincup is behind McLaughlin.
Which is exactly what McLaughlin wanted. So they had to try something 888. So they were going to have a crack at an undercut was my thinking at that point in time. And that's exactly what they did. And on lap 8, in he came. So he came in along with Courtney and Coulthard at the same time. So, you know, they came in nose to tail. And then we had the fire in the airbox problem again, we think, for Tickford, although Courtney says it was something to do with the electronics and the pit lane speed limit are not coming off easily. But when they crossed the little white line that said, go hard, he went to go hard.
He went and soft. He didn't, and well,
yes, that's probably one way to put it. Coulthard had to jink around him and almost ran into the back of him. So pretty good save by Fabs to get around, and off we went.
That was like, what? What? First of all, thought, are you even allowed to do that?
Well, he's not allowed to until you get to the white line. So thankfully it was only after they tried to go hard that it didn't work. And there was enough space for him because it's a nice wide pit lane exit. Imagine at some of our tracks, you just wouldn't have been able to do that. You'd be sitting there pushing him along, trying to get him to go a bit faster. So he got around and it was a good move. Saved himself got himself in a position to line up Wincup to help his teammate.
Well, Waters is followed by McLaughlin, and they both come in the pits at the same time. Bit of stress going on in the pits, though, making sure that Scott keeps his nose clean.
Yeah, again, focus was what this was all about. So the stops were fairly similar in length. I think the Shell team was a little bit quicker than the Tickford car, and as he went past, you could see him, as he eased out of his pit box, you could see the potential for conflict, and the guy on the radio is just going, behind him, you know, just telling him. So tell him to come behind Cam. You know, they did not want the contact, and really well managed, I thought, from the team to be so vocal and so clear in their communications with him.
Well, as it all cycled through, Cameron Waters is back in the lead, followed by McLaughlin, followed by Wincup. And they kind of just stayed there like that. The battles were down in the pack. It was Andre and Anton, Smith and Kostecki, Hazelwood, Holdsworth and Coulthard all having their own little stoushes.
Yeah, good, wasn't it? It's great to see them. And you know, hats off to Fox and Supercars for actually showing us these other battles because, you know, the race at the front was relatively static. I mean, we know it was significant.
Static,
in terms of what
static
it,
you say? I say boring, yeah. But anyway, I'll go with static.
But we know what it meant to the championship. So you could have easily just stood there and focused on them and just kept talking about how great McLaughlin and Wincup are and the battle, blah, blah, blah. Instead, though, they gave us some of those battles down the order and they were good. They were feisty and lively. So, you know, again, you know, sheep stations. You can have a sheep station if you're fighting for 23rd, if that's what you want.
I loved it.
You know, it matters. It all matters.
Oh, yeah. So Waters gets his first solo win. From McLaughlin, and Wincup follows McLaughlin, and that's kind of the title, done and dusted.
Yep, she certainly was dusted. That was a 305-point advantage to McLaughlin. So well and truly enough, unless he gets a penalty at Bathurst that drops him a few points and he doesn't finish and Wincup wins, that's all over. So it's still technically not absolutely 100% locked away and sealed. But in all honesty, it is done. So, you know, that's the title.
So the finishing order. So the finishing order for race 30 was Cameron Waters followed by Scott McLaughlin. And rounding out the podium was Jamie Wincup. Nick Percat in fourth. Shane Van Gisbergen in fifth, Chaz Mostert in sixth, followed by Todd Hazelwood, Fabian Coulthard, Lee Holdsworth, and rounding out the top 10, James Courtney. Any noticeables there?
Probably the one. The one thing to note is Rick Kelly's run to 15th. So they put the lightweight engine in the front of that Mustang, and it changed the entire handling balance of the car. So Rick was having a really tough time getting his head around the car and how they're going to set it up. So critical weekend for Bathurst, given that both cars are going to Bathurst with the lightweight engines. So yeah. They'll get that right, hopefully.
Well, it comes down to the driver points, and Scott McLaughlin has, well, snared the championship unless he gets a penalty at Bathurst. But I don't think that's going to happen. So Scott McLaughlin's on 2,354 points. Jamie Wincup's on 2,049 points. That's 305 points off the lead, effectively making Scott the champion with one round to go. Cameron Waters is 1,849 points, 505 points behind the leader. Shane Van Gisbergen in fourth. Chaz Mostert in fifth. In sixth is Nick Percat. In seventh, Fabian Coulthard. In eighth, Anton Di Pasquale. In ninth, Mark Winterbottom. And rounding out the top 10 is Scott Pye. But there's something to note here. It's all pretty close between second, third, or fourth, and fifth, sixth, and seventh. They've got their own personal battle going on. So it's, the order's not done and dusted. It's just the top guys secure.
Yeah, we know position one's done, but I think Cam Waters will be thinking he's a really good shot at Bathurst, which I think he is with Will Davison, his co-driver. So he'll be looking for 300 points there and a sneaky chance that he thinks he could probably get Jamie Wincup if there's a drama. So, you know, Wincup's not safe in second yet, but as Ricky Bobby says, if you're not first, you're last. So, you know, I don't think Jamie's too concerned about second. All Jamie wants to do now is win Bathurst. So they'll be going for that.
Well, Shane Van Gisbergen could jump Cam Waters at Bathurst.
Oh, they could. Everybody could. You look at that. So it's 305 points to Jamie, but you've got to go back. You got to go back another 200 points to get to Cam Waters. But then it's 54 points to Shane, 95 to Chaz, 59 to Nick Percat, 81 to Fabian, 91 to Anton, 83 to Mark Winterbottom, and 4 points to Scott Pye. So those orders, those spots are going to change. There is no doubt that while we've read out our top 10 here, that will not be the top 10 after Bathurst.
Bit of stats for you. The current win tally, Scott McLaughlin's on 13 wins from 31 races. Jamie Wincup's on 4 wins. Shane Van Gisbergen's on 3. Nick Percat's on 2. Jack LeBrock's on 1. Anton Di Pasquale is on 1. Fabian Coulthard's on 1. And Cameron Waters makes his debut for this year on 1 win as well.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So we've only had effectively, so we're on race 30, but we've only had 26 completed races. So that means Scott McLaughlin has won 50% of all the races this year. That's not a bad year, is it, Nev?
No, I'll take that.
And apparently, what is it, 48 or 49 wins for DJR Team Penske. So, I think they're looking forward to trying to knock that up before he leaves us for IndyCars.
Well, that brings us to the team's championship. Shell V-Power Racing Team on 3,914 points, followed by the Red Bull Holden Racing Team on 3,814 points. That's 100 points behind the Shell team. So those points that Jamie lost with the team lost him in that pit stop is significant because they would have been closer.
Every point at this stage is critical for those two teams because, you know, they all want that last spot in pit lane. So they're fighting for that. And I think that's probably what would have gutted them more than anything was that problem with the rattle gun was that it cost them so many championship points in that sense. Remember, there's 576 points up for grabs at Bathurst if you finish first and second. You know, so that's the number to keep in mind there. So that's a lot of points to be done. That 100 points is nowhere near safe.
Well, all I know is the top two teams are safe in regards to one of them's going to end up in first and one of them's going to end up in second because the third team, which is the first of the Tickford outfits, because there's two of them, is 795 points behind.
So just for the record, the Tickford one is Cam Waters and Jack LeBrock. So they've both had race wins this year. Yet they're only just in front of the team from Lee Holdsworth and James Courtney, which is, hasn't had any race wins. So a bit of inconsistency maybe across the board there, but interesting how that all pans out, that the two Tickford teams are so close to each other.
The wins for the teams as such, DJR had 14 for the year. Red Bull have had 7. Tickford have had 2. Erebus have had 1. And BJR have had 2.
Yeah, the 2 Percat wins, and weren't they so important to that team?
Yeah, they've had 14 in the whole history of supercars, where Red Bull have had 202.
It's a big difference, isn't it?
It's massive.
But I think they've spent a bit more than the Brad Jones racing outfit.
Yeah, just a little bit. And
final... I think just the 2 drivers alone, so just paying those 2 drivers is probably the whole budget for BJR.
That brings us down to the manufacturers, and there's only 2 in that, Holden and Ford. Holden have got 10 wins, and Ford have got 16 wins.
Yeah, and that's, well, what are we going to see? Holden is beaten in its final season in supercars, although they're going to go on next year. I don't know what sort of badges they're going to run, but, they'll be out there next year for their final year and comprehensively beaten by the Mustangs this year, in the year where they fix the parity problems.
I know.
Theoretically, when we sit back and look at it, you know, all the off-season stuff that was done to say the Mustang was a better car than the Holden, and they've come out and still beaten them. So I think there's a bit more to it than just changing a few aero things. I think the DJR Team Penske mob are doing a very good job.
Well, I think also the driver is probably the class of the field at the moment as well. He's very positive. He doesn't seem to be able to put a foot wrong. And if he does, he seems to be able to recover.
Yeah, he does. That's the beauty of it, is that he doesn't make many mistakes. I mean, I think I can only remember 2 mistakes for the entire season, which isn't bad when you're talking, you know, 26 races and 26 qualifying sessions. So pretty good. He's very consistent, very solid, but he's fast and he knows how to switch the car on for qualifying, and that's giving him the advantage in the race that the others don't have. So Van Gisbergen, we know, races like no one else, but if you're going to start in 22nd spot, you're not going to be winning races, are you? So I think it's that qualifying consistency with McLaughlin that's what sealed the championship for him so early.
Yep. Well, McLaughlin's off to race IndyCar after Bathurst. And it looks like he's going to be racing IndyCars in 2021. Everybody along pit lane, except maybe DJR, but anyway, they're wishing him the best. Everybody along pit lane's hoping that he's so successful in IndyCar that he freaking stays over there.
I think they are, yeah. Although I think the really good drivers, so your Van Gisbergen and Wind Cup mom probably just want to beat him. So I think they'd be a little upset that he's not around to be beaten next year. But I think the writing's on the board. This is his last season in supercars, which is why Bathurst is so important to him. And that'll become a bit of a focus when we do our preview edition for Bathurst in a week or 2's time.
Okay, Clarky, I appreciate your input. Listeners, thank you for tuning in. And we'll catch you in a couple of days' time for our driver rating show.
Scott McLaughlin entered the second of 2 outings at the Bend with his only goal to stretch his championship lead beyond the 300 points on offer for winning Bathurst. And he did that by the slenderest of margins, 5 points after a pair of wins and a second place, while his main rival, Jamie Wincup, struggled in the first 2 races of the weekend. And a rare race error in pit lane sealed his fate and killed the championship in 1 go. On paper, the closing weekend of the sprint race series was a little quiet, but it had enough up and down the field to entertain. We loved the side-by-side battles and even the 5 wide run onto the main straight at the opening of the final race, proving even those at the back of the field are amazingly talented drivers. It's now a gloves-off affair for the heavyweights of the sport as Shell V-Power Racing and Red Bull Racing head to the season-closing Bathurst 1000 with no consequences and only a race win on their minds. This is what we're waiting for. I'm Andrew Clark. This has been Supercars in Review. Join us soon for the driver ratings and the big Bathurst preview.